I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 53 of Internet Marketing, the show that helps you use the internet as part of your marketing machine. Coming up in today's show, questions you should ask your agency, a white paper on integrated search from Helen Trendle and some of her amazing acronyms, some information on Squidoo, and an interview with Steve Waddington all about online PR, coming up in Internet Marketing. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Internet Marketing. I have on the line with me today Mr. Daniel Rowles.
Good afternoon.
There's a slight hesitance there in your voice, Daniel.
Oh, I was just you came to me first. I was quite excited.
You're shocked.
It doesn't know what time of day it is. That's the one I think that worries me.
I've lost the plot a bit. I've been training 12 people in internet marketing for 3 days straight up at the CIM headquarters here in Moore Hall. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit frazzled, I have to admit.
So you've been working very hard. And you heard briefly there also Mr. Kelvin Newman.
Afternoon or morning or good night or whatever the time is people
depending
are listening
where
to
you
this.
Are.
Yeah. And Helen Trendle.
Howdy.
You see, that's what I like about Helen. She keeps it very short and sweet.
And it was doesn't love the sound as well. It was clever.
Yeah. Yeah, doesn't love the sound of a voice like me. That's the problem, you see. So
coming up in today's show, we have questions you should ask your agency. We have a white paper on integrated search from Helen, and a little bit of news from Kelvin, and an interview from Kelvin, but more of that later. Dan, let's talk about questions you should ask your agency.
Okay. Well, as I said, I've been running this kind of marketing course, digital marketing course, the last 3 days. And the question that came out time and time again was lots of kind of big companies here, lots of smaller SMEs as well, saying, how can I work out if I can trust an agency? When I'm interviewing an agency, how do I work out how efficient they're going to be, how well they're going to work? Now, I thought there's some key questions you can ask. Obviously, having worked with AI Digital and Site Visibility for ages, seen it from the inside point of view, and also working client-side now, see it from that point of view as well. So it's interesting to see what the best practice is and obviously get a bit of comment from Kevin and Kelvin and Helen as well, just in terms of what they think of this stuff.
Yes, feel free to dive in, team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, I think one of the key things is the key question of who exactly is going to be working on your project? And I'm very aware of Site Visibility do this, but a lot of agencies don't, is that you'll get someone come along to pitch to you, will be sell you the most fantastic thing in the world, and then when it comes to it, they've got absolutely nothing to do with the project whatsoever. Okay? Mm. So it's really important to meet your account manager you're going to be working with and actually find out the team you're going to be working with as well.
Yeah, I think that's really important for people to bear in mind, because in any kind of business where, you know, when you're talking to a salesperson, they're going to tell you what you want to hear. And what you need to do is know who you're going to be dealing with on a day-to-day basis, not just, oh, they sent out the whizzy guy who was, you know, super confident, and now you've got this other person who's not so great. So, yeah, definitely ask to see who you're dealing with, because that's going to make a big impact on how successful you get on with them, really. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's just an honesty level there as well. And the other thing, I mean, as well, I've seen happen in the past as well, is if you have to work with multiple suppliers, so if you haven't just got, you know, you might have an SEO agency, you might have somebody doing the email, you might have somebody doing the design side of things, how are they going to work together? How are they going to integrate? And it's really worth getting all your agencies in one place at one time as well. Something that Site Visibility has done in the past, and I've seen with a few of the agencies I've been working with as well, is you appoint a lead agency. So you say, okay, this agency is going to be in charge. The agency that's got the account management and the project management experience looks after the other agencies as well.
Wow. So you're suggesting multiple agencies?
I think you can have different, I mean, sometimes you have to have different people working on the same project. I mean, you're not always going to get a multi-service agency that can cover absolutely everything. So it would be quite normal to have, you know, different people working on things. Even if you had a full-service agency, sometimes they'd be working with different tools and those kind of things as well. So basically, I think it's probably worth making somebody the lead agency and they can do the account and the project management side of things and add a bit of value from doing that as well. And that seems to work quite well as well.
I think it's important when you're dealing, you know, with any kind of integrated marketing strategy, you need to have someone either on your, you know, in-house or at one of the agencies working a bit like a quarterback you get in American football, who's deciding what happens when, you know, that everyone's working as a team. So, yeah, that's good to do that, whether it's a, you know, an outside agency or someone inside. You need to know that someone's looking at everything, as it were. Whereas if you've got independent agencies working separately, sometimes they can be cannibalizing yourself. So it's kind of one person wants to do a certain thing with a press release, whereas another person wants to do something else with the press release, and vice versa, really.
So one of the agencies does need to act as a sort of coordinating type role.
Yeah, absolutely. And it tends to work quite well. You just need to get the agencies in the room at the beginning to make sure there aren't any ego issues. And I think that comes together quite well. Now, the most important thing of all this, I tend to think, is specification process. Whether it's a web design project, an SEO project, anything, if you don't get a specification right, the rest of the project just falls apart. So if you're looking at specifications, the more time you spend on that part of the process and the more detailed that part of the process is, the more likely the rest of it is actually going to go to plan. Just purely because you're setting expectations, the more technical the project is, so in the case of web development and those kind of things as well, if you can get into having a functional specification that says what it does, and a technical specification saying how it's going to work, what platforms it's going to work on, if it's a web project, essentially what browsers it works on, and those kind of things. And then get into the basis of use cases. So things like how, if you click here, this is going to happen, and wireframes, what's the page and the layout look like? Not designed, but step by step.
Right, there's a lot of noise. Who's got a lot of noise?
Jeremy Paxman's just walked past outside and everyone's got very excited.
Oh dear, these television personalities, they just have this annoying habit of turning up in Brighton and
Rachel,
ruining podcasts.
We're recording a podcast, so can you get lots of these?
Sorry, Daniel,
there
where
we
were
go.
You?
That's older.
This is the most chaotic podcast of all time.
I think we need a recording light. I think that would help.
Yeah, a big red light of some sort. Or recording.
Studio would be definitely beneficial.
Yeah, or a recording teddy bear or something you put on your desk when you're recording.
Yeah, okay.
Now, where were we, Dan?
So technical specifications. So one of the key things to go for this kind of website development side of things are use cases. So if you click here, this happens, you go to this page and so on and so forth. And then also wireframe diagrams. And it's very easy to produce interactive wireframes now as well.
Daniel, so, just fill us in. What's a wireframe? I've come across this before in development.
Sure. Well, a wireframe is literally something that lays out what's going to be where on the page without having to go into the design side of things. Because you don't want to get tied down in this process of it's going to be blue and shiny and so on and so forth. You really want to work out what the functionality and the usability of the page is. And then you start to worry about the graphic design side of things.
So just getting the basic area sorted out then.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is that it's really important to make sure expectations are equal. So when you get to the end of the project, you can actually say, does it do this? Yes, it does. Ticks it off. Okay, the project's finished. Otherwise, you get into this horrible cycle of going, well, I expected it to do this. Oh, we can't do that as part of the budget. And nobody wins in those situations.
Absolutely.
So I think it's really important to get the specification process right. Now, we touched on design there. And one of the really difficult things about design is how subjective it can be as well. So when you get designs done, you want two or three options to start with. You want to have a few different routes that you can go down. Make sure that your designer knows about usability. So they're not just designing because it looks pretty, but it actually makes sense from a usability perspective. But also, get to the point. If you're going to choose a designer, okay, make sure you're letting them do their job. The problem is that, and I'm saying this from a client point of view now, as well, I've seen it happen all the time, is that your design comes back and you say, well, could you move that bit there and this bit there? Okay, fine. Could you do this, do that? A design should be based on the fact that there's some usability behind it, so things should be in a place for a certain reason. Now, you can tweak things, but it amazes me still now how many people like me as a client and MDs and chair people are experts in web design or think they're experts in web design. design as well. So you don't want to get into this loop of just changing and changing a design, so it just gets really bland. So pick a designer, let them do their job, make sure what they're doing is based on usability principles, but don't assume, don't let people that don't know about design actually comment on that. I think that's one of the issues that you can get into. And you need to get to the point of letting the designer do their job a lot of the time.
Any thoughts, anyone?
I suppose it comes down a lot to sort of too many cooks as well. It's important from a client perspective is choosing someone who is the project owner and the project sponsor who has the ultimate decision, because otherwise you just get decisions by committee and as you say, you end up with a bland result that doesn't actually achieve the objectives and no one can even remember what the objectives were. So I think definitely choosing a project leader on the client side is really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And just another thing on that as well. I mean, when you're doing the briefing process in the first place and people are saying, should we work with this designer or another? Quite often what will happen is the designer comes up with an initial kind of idea. Just because you don't like that particular idea, don't dismiss that designer, because the point is they're just trying to come up with a concept to try and, you know, get things moving. That isn't a reason to get rid of a designer. You need to look at their overall body of work before you make a decision. So a lot of designers won't do designs for a pitch meeting. They'll come up with concepts rather than actually come up with a design.
Sure, yeah.
So I think that's really the key things that have come out over the last couple of days, just little pointers. I've actually written a little white paper on this as well. So what I'll do is I will pass the link through to Andy. We'll PDF it up and we'll make it available to everybody as well.
And I shall put it in the show notes.
Fantastic.
Now moving on. Helen, you've got some thoughts on integrated search. And I believe you've done a, talking of white papers, you've done a white paper as well, haven't you?
Well, it's hot off the presses today, in fact. They've been beavering away, sort of developing these integrated search models for the last, well, best part of the year, really. And it's sort of come together in this sort of white paper.
Should we just refresh out the memories of our listeners? Tell us again, integrated search, what does this mean?
Well, integrated search is really bringing together all the different sorts of parts of search, whether that be organic search, paid search, or social search, and pulling them together into one integrated strategy. And anyone that knows me is aware of my strange fascination with marketing acronyms. And I'm always...
She loves them. She really does.
Any opportunity I get, I like to make things into memorable acronyms that spell other words.
Yeah, I think memorable is the key here, isn't it? It's no good coming up with a description.
No, exactly. So I mean, this is sort of based on things like ADA. We're going back to the sort of advertising acronym of attention, interest, desire, and action.
Yeah.
And my other favourite one, which is SOSTAC, which is a sort of strategic.
That's not memorable, though, is it? That's SOSTAC.
I believe it's copyrighted now as well.
SOSTAC.
And you can even get whole courses on it with people just sort of going into the details of what it means. But that one stands for situational analysis, objectives, strategy, tactics, actions, and control.
And so we've just probably broken more... 16 copyright laws by just
quoting that. They're sending the heavies round, Helen. You better watch out.
Oh dear, yeah, that's well, maybe there's some more models that we can talk about here. Yeah, and you know, there should be directions in the show notes for where you can find out more about these courses and information on those particular models.
Nice, get out there, Helen.
And I'm sure you'll be emailing those to me as soon as the recording finishes, Helen.
Indeed.
Excellent.
And so, you know, as I say, I've been a big fan of these, and I really wanted to find an easy and repeatable way of enabling integrated search campaigns and coming up with sort of quick ideas that were going to actually deliver impact for clients. So what I've done is sort of taken a step back and really looked at what's important. And the three sort of things that I identified were that clients were looking for, they wanted to generate leads, they wanted to reduce their current pay-per-click spend, or horror of horrors with the sort of times that we're living in at the moment, they've maybe got some reduced resources and they're needing to get sort of more bang for their buck out of what they've already got. And so the three models that I put together in these handy acronyms are THEME, which is basically the strategy for increasing your leads.
Yeah.
Koala, which is my personal favourite, which is the strategy for reducing or reduced budgets.
Mm-hmm.
And then Caper, which is the strategy for reduced resources. So I'm sure you're dying to know what these stand
well, yes,
for.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Theme, which is the one for increasing leads, stands for T for Tribes, which is basically pulling on Seth Godin's sort of connotation of audiences grouped by behaviour. Mm. So it's a case of identifying and segmenting your website visitors by their sort of behaviour and other characteristics and demographics and other data that you might have on them. And then finding a hook, which is the kind of the main benefit of why they'd be visiting your website and what particular products would be of interest to each particular tribe.
Mm.
Then creating some engaging content, which would be something that they'll really want to link to and share amongst the rest of their tribe. And then M is for marketing, so deciding how to promote it.
Mm.
Which could be across all channels. So that's, you know, is it pay-per-click? Is it SEO? Is it social media? Is it maybe even utilizing, you know, your existing email marketing database? Or, you know, when we're talking about working with other agencies, we often, you know, might be working with PR agencies and things like that as well. So it's really taking your sort of campaign and getting as much value from it as you possibly can. And then the final part is E for evaluation. So how are you going to measure the success of it? So that fits nicely into the first model, which is Theme.
I'm impressed.
You know what? I'm very cynical of such things normally. And acronyms for the sake of acronyms drive me mad. But to be honest, that's actually very, very, very good because a lot of the things I've been talking about the last few days as well, I've just basically been working out what is the hook and trying to work out the content they need to engage with those people. So I think that's actually really good advice.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that my beavering is paying off. I mean, I've been sort of testing this on a number of campaigns, and I've got a little case study which goes into more detail in the white paper. We did something for Environment in Business, one of the LexisNexis websites, and by basically identifying that their sort of main tribes were environmental management consultants, and then looking at the hook, which was, you know, these people want to stay ahead of their peers with the latest information on environmental management. But the problem that we had was all the great content was behind the paywall. So it was like, what content can we come up with? And we thought that we could extract sort of part of the sort of paid content into a free blog that could then drive people to the site. So that's the engaging content.
Mm.
And then really sort of engaging marketing through blogger outreach and social networks and seeding some of the content and the posts onto third-party sites was driving people and then subsequently links. And it really took off. And we were measuring the success of the campaign on traffic, rankings, and number of links. And the traffic from natural search increased by 852% in 4 months. The rankings increased for their top term, which is environment business, from position 7 to position number 1. And the number of links and also subsequent referring traffic also increased. So it was all round a success, which made the development of the theme approach really sort of take hold and then start to identify some additional places.
Yeah, I think it always comes back to that thing of just that original content idea is so important of just really engaging with people. So I think that's excellent. I shall be intrigued to read it.
Yeah, it's all about having a process. You know, the great thing about, you know, internet marketing and all the various things we talk about here on the podcast is there's loads you can learn about it online. You know, you can listen to the podcast, you can go out and read blogs, there's loads you can do. But where the difficult bit is trying to work that into a system so you don't forget something and you include every aspect. And that's kind of why we try to use these systems. It's why other organizations have their own kind of models where they do these. But we put together this white paper because, you know, we've learned what we've gone through and we think that hopefully other people can kind of use that if they're doing their own marketing, or they can use it as a suggestion for how they might be able to work with their agency and all those kind of things. things, really. It's just kind of sharing the information and the knowledge as we learn it, really, to try and push internet marketing forward, really.
This is really good. Helen, can you very quickly tell us about Koala and Caper? Are they both K's or C's? Or
Koala's with a K and Caper's with a C. So Koala, in a nutshell, is keyword, optimise for the keyword, add some call to actions, and then link it internally using that keyword in the anchor text, and then approach third-party sites and get them to link to it. So that's Koala.
You need to write a book, Helen. You should write a book called Internet Marketing Acronyms by Helen Trendle.
Now you're talking.
There you go. You heard it first on Internet Marketing. What a caper.
101 internet acronym. Oh,
what a caper. Like what a joke, perfect though, segue into the last acronym, caper.
Well, this one's all about if you've got reduced resources, and it's really utilising, you know, if you've got a lot of content already. So the first one is for content. Then A is for audience, so understanding who the content that you've already created is aimed at. Then platforms, discovering where those audiences that would enjoy that content can be found online. So is that through Facebook groups? Is that through Twitter? Is it on Flickr? Where are the platforms? And then again, it's E is for engage. So getting out there, starting a conversation with them, driving links and traffic back to the content. And then finally, if you've already got this great content, what about repurposing it? So, you know, if you've already got a series of blog posts, for example, then you could maybe put that together into a white paper. Or if you've got a white paper, you could maybe create a podcast out of it. So it's just really sort of getting the most value out of everything that you produce for your internet marketing. And if you're producing good content, then, you know, it just will pay for itself again and again.
Oh,
in
totally
terms
agree.
Of traffic, yeah. Leads and ultimately revenue.
Well, you've helped me decide what this episode is going to be called. It's going to be called the Theme Koala Caper. Which segues beautifully onto Squidoo.
Yeah, another interesting name there. I don't think that one's an acronym, but that's, you know, as Helen mentioned there, that, you know, talking about Seth Godin and Tribes, he's a person that we've actually got an interview coming up. You know, we had the disastrous interview where I managed to make a complete fool of myself while interviewing Seth, which you might have heard a few episodes ago.
I don't think you should be so hard on yourself. I think technology was against you that day.
Yeah, this is it. But being that Seth's, you know, this, you know, popular author that he is and, you know, runner of all these businesses, we've managed to schedule some more time in, so that'll be coming up in a couple of months' time. But what's an interesting sort of piece of news about Seth is one of his projects he works on called Squidoo, and they came up with quite an interesting idea this week called I can't remember the exact title of what they called it, where is it? It was Brands in Public. Basically, Squidoo is a kind of website where lots of people can easily upload content. It's a bit like Wikipedia, but kind of commercialized in a way. And they had a good idea that, well, everybody's talking about you online in all these environments, in forums, in Google News, in Twitter, in Facebook, in blogs, in all these places they're talking about you. So what they did is their idea was, well, for all the major brands, we'll create a page for them that will centralize and aggregate that data, and we'll allow the kind of website owners to kind of contact back on there. But there was kind of a bit of a, quite a lot of, negative feedback that Seth got on that one, unfortunately. And they've kind of tailed it back a bit now, because I think what the problem was is the way that Squidoo were going to make money.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? Alright, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
From this is if you were Coca-Cola and you wanted to edit your Coca-Cola page, you had to pay Squidoo some money for that. So, I mean, an interesting idea that they've come up with there, but you know, definitely worth looking into potentially is, you know, can someone centralize where all this positive and negative feedback for your business is to help you kind of deal with that? So from that perspective, I think it's a good thing, but didn't quite happen as planned. So yeah, that's definitely an interesting one there for Squidoo. That's worth a little bit of news there for people to pick up on as well. Another one, well, that following on from that is, as I was talking about Seth's interview there, and we've got a couple of exciting ones come up. One that I'm not going to jinx by saying who it is, but is, you know, after Seth, probably my favourite marketing internet guru in the world. So I won't say who he is. But
so you're not going to name drop then, Kelvin?
No. But I'll curse it if I say that one. But one that is, you know, looking very likely as well, once the new version is of their software set out, is Garrett from StumbleUpon, the guys who set up, you know, one of the biggest social media bookmarking and voting sites in the world. He's going to be talking to us about their new version of the site that's coming out in a couple of episodes' time. But the question I want to ask out to the listeners to try and get people involved is, who would you like us to interview in the show? We kind of go out and interview people we're really interested in, but I'd love to hear who you think we should interview. So if you can drop us a quick email via the emails that's on the show notes, or if you use Twitter, use our hashtag, which is #IMPC, and let us know who you think we should interview, because we get a great response from people when we go out and ask them. But it's kind of, we don't know who you think we should be asking. So if you've got anyone you think, you know, other listeners would love to hear from, let us know. That'd be brilliant. And the final thing from me, I'll be really quick on, is a site definitely to check out is, it's called Adly, so ad.ly, which is a service which will allow you to buy sponsored tweets. So I can say, oh, Kelvin's got this new great blog post coming out. I want those people to talk about it. So I pay people $50 to tweet that. And it's kind of interesting because it might change how people are using Twitter. If everyone starts doing that, it'll ruin the service.
Yeah.
But also, if you've got 20,000 people following you and once every 3 weeks you take £50 for doing it, is that such a bad thing? So a lot of debate going on about that. But if you've got lots of followers, it's definitely worth signing up for, I would have thought.
I think this whole thing of, you don't have to listen to somebody, you choose to follow them. So at the end of the day, if somebody is making loads of commercial messages, you're just going to chop them off the list. So it's in people's interest not to do it too often and only to talk about offers that are of interest to their followers to a certain extent as well. So I'm hoping to some extent it's going to become self-regulating.
Definitely.
Because you choose who you follow. So I think it's a fairly positive move. And I think there's people like Shoe Money doing it. And I think that if he overdoes it, he's going to lose followers. And he's completely aware of that as well. So it seems like quite a straightforward way to go.
It's going to be very interesting to see what the feedback is from the listeners actually on this one.
Yeah, I mean, because we get some great feedback from us on IMPC, you know, on that hashtag there. And yeah, I'd love to hear whether people think they, you know, so say you're following me on my Twitter account and I suddenly start promoting services, would that make you think less of me? I think if I'm choosing the, I'm not going to do it, but if I were choosing those products, hopefully you wouldn't think less of me, but would you? Because, you know, they're the decisions that, you know, people who are being followed have to make, really.
Definitely. Yeah. So now on the subject of, sorry, Dan, did you want to say something?
I just want to put in a quick plug for a website, if that's okay.
Proceed.
Not for me, but from somebody else. We might remember some time ago we interviewed Kieran Rogers, who is the marketing manager over at the UKSA.
I remember Kieran down in the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kieran is always on. I meet up with him from now and again, and he's always pointing out things to me in digital marketing and software and those kind of things that I haven't come across at all. So I thought he's just launched a new blog, and there's some really good tips and hints and things like that in there. So I think it would only be fair. So if you want to have a look at webshoutmarketing.net, that's Kieran's new blog, and it's well worth taking a look at. There's some really good kind of plugs for new bits of software he's come across and different websites. And I always learn something when I have a chat with Kieran. So have a look at webshoutmarketing.net and see what you can learn.
I'm just writing it down now so I can put it in the show notes. Webshoutmarketing.com, is it?
.net.
Okay. That's now, just before we go on to the interview, can I just do a little thing that I've been playing with this week? But just before I talk about that, just to remind us all here, all four of us on the team, we've had quite a bit of feedback. I've seen a few emails going backwards and forwards, so perhaps the next episode would need to cover a few of the questions I've been asking.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. There's a lot that's been coming through. I've been trying to respond to people's emails as they ask me the questions. Mm. So if anyone's got a question for me, yeah, drop me an email and I'll try and help out. But yeah, it'd be good to share that, the answers of those, with everyone else listening as well. So yeah, I'll make a note to put that in next month.
Okay, nice one. So just before we go on to the interview, which Kelvin will introduce in a second, I've been playing with Posterous. Has anyone played with Posterous?
I've heard of it, but not used it yet. So yeah, I'd be interested to hear what your opinion is, Anne.
I've had a quick play with it. Basically, what Posterous is, it's like blogging. Let me think of a good way of describing this. It's almost like an email gateway to a blog. So you email some text to your Posterous account, and it automatically puts it on your Posterous account as a blog. So, for example, if my name is Fred Blogs, I might be fredblogs.posterous.com. But the really nice thing about Posterous is that if you attach an MP3, this is where it gets really interesting. If you attach an MP3, it will embed it into the page with its own little nice player and give you an RSS feed. In fact, it gives you an RSS feed anyway. So basically, it's a very nice way of starting your own podcast. You get a gigabyte of storage. It's free. Also, if you attach one or more images to your email, they get embedded very nicely in the page. If it's more than one image, you get a nice little sort of gallery type affair. It looks very, very interesting.
So have yeah, these
that's
kind
interesting because there's been the. So it's interesting because the functionality for WordPress to do similar thing has been around for a little while. You could always email your WordPress blog and it'd automatically get posted in it as well. But I think they've just taken it that step further that it's actually doing some of the content and just kind of laying out in a much nicer way as well.
And yeah, I mean, I think it's so easy to use from the feedback I've had about it, you know, because WordPress is great. You know, we love it here. You know, we can't sing the praises enough. But for a lot of people, it's a bit too involved and too technical.
Yes.
Whereas I think this Posterous is great if you're kind of, you know, you're interested in putting some content out there, but you don't want to spend 4 hours setting up a blog and then upgrading it for an hour every 2 months and that. You don't want to do that. You just want to kind of get the content out there. You want to share your opinion, and it's for that kind of thing that this looks really, you know, really interesting.
Okay, Kelvin, tell us about Stephen Waddington.
Yeah, it's a chap I interviewed a little while ago. He's from Speed Communications, which is a online PR company. He founded Rainier PR, which then got bought became part of Speed's technology team. And he's kind of really been in the forefront of the UK's pushing online PR and dealing with kind of, he's come from an offline PR perspective, but dealing with kind of, you know, web companies, with SEO companies, with social media companies, and trying to see how they can work together. So I did an interview with him asking, you know, about sort of an introduction to online PR, because it's not one we've really covered a huge amount in the podcast fairly recently. So kind of a big introduction to it there. And it also asking him a few questions about The Apprentice, because that's kind of a bit of a shared interest that we've got there, that we're both into The Apprentice. It's my claim to fame, Andy, that you might not know.
Well, you've got many claims to fame. To fames, Kelvin.
Yeah, I got through to the second round of the second series of The Apprentice, but didn't turn up to my interview. Yeah, I didn't turn up to the interview though, so I didn't get turned down.
What else have you done, Kelvin, that you haven't told us about?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff.
Have you stood for president or?
No, not yet. But you know, I am only 26, so you know, who knows what could happen in the future.
I wouldn't put you a day over 35. honestly.
Well, it's, yeah, I don't know what says. I mean, maybe just get some, you know, that men moisturiser to look a little bit younger.
Okay, fantastic. So we'll play out with that interview, but not before. We have said goodbye now. So it was goodbye from Daniel Rowles.
Goodbye.
You were drinking then, weren't you, Daniel?
I wasn't. Am I gargling at someone then? Goodbye.
Goodbye from Helen.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from Kelvin.
Toodle pip or night-night John Boyle, however you want to do it.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you for listening to Internet Marketing. We will now play out with that interview where Kelvin speaks to Steve Waddington. Have a great time. See you soon.
You're very much at the front of traditional PRs, sort of getting it in social media with your blog and kind of where you know where your agencies have gone. What do you think is the biggest challenge for traditional PR people trying to work online?
What you're seeing at the moment is agencies attempting to retool and change the way they work from a traditional PR standpoint to apply techniques online. The biggest challenges that traditional techniques just don't work, and the method of engagement online is just is very, very different. It's quite subtle, but it's very different. In the traditional PR, dealt very much in the editorial world, so you're seeking to create influence amongst journalists and editors to get your client or get your business in print in traditional formats, that's newspapers and magazines. In the online world, your relationship with your the person you're trying to influence is often direct. So there isn't the intermediary of working through a third party such as a journalist. And your relationship is much more one-on-one. It's quite subtle, but it's an important step change. It does mean that from a marketing and PR point of view, it makes the whole aspect of PR a lot more measurable. And, you know, I hope that's something we're going to be able to talk about this morning.
Yeah, and do you think then, so that means that, okay, there's going to be some people who are going to be able to retool, they're going to be able to retrain and understand the difference there, and is there just some people who are never quite going to be able to make that shift? Not to say that traditional PR is going to die out in any time in the immediate future, but do you think some people are just able to make that change and some people just never will be able to make that change?
Oh, almost certainly, and a good model for this, a very good model indeed at the moment, is if you look in the publishing world, the way that some magazines and publishing houses and newspapers are completely embracing the online world and re-engineering their businesses completely around it. And The Guardian, The Telegraph are all great examples of this. They've taken their newsrooms and turned their newsrooms into a constant 24-hour operations where stories are put out as the break rather than to a print deadline. And the same applies in PR. Conversations are going on around individuals and their brands constantly. You need to be engaged in that. Almost certainly, some businesses and PR businesses will not make that transition. There's two things happening at the moment. In the PR industry, we've got this discontinuity, let's call it, that's been created by digital, that's forcing us all to re-examine our business models and make that jump. There's also the recession. The recession, unless you recognise and take appropriate steps within your business to manage your business around that, that means that, again, a wave of businesses are falling away. You only need to look at the media or the PR sector and see every single week, there's announcements of redundancies in businesses. But there's also, interestingly, new businesses setting up to take their place, which is hugely exciting. Digital PR businesses tooled up purely for this new world.
Brilliant. So one area of kind of social media and digital that PR really seems to have got and be, taking advantage of is Twitter. Is there something particularly about that technology and that platform that, appeals to PR people, would you think?
Yeah, so Twitter has become a kind of intermediary tool, a tool, if you like, on the way to wholesale digital engagement. And much of the work that we do continues to be around, much of the work the online PR do is still engagement with journalists and influencers and analysts and editors. Twitter provides a very deep channel to build those relationships directly with journalists. It also provides an excellent channel for a journalist. If you're a journalist receiving 200 or 300 pitches a day from PR people, you don't look at your email box. If you're receiving those pitches by DM through Twitter in 140 characters, then it's a lot easier to sift through stuff and find stuff. So it works for journalists, it works for the PR community as well. It's a tool for pitching. Now the next stage is to go beyond that and use Twitter for PR purposes to connect directly with the audiences, and that's what the industry is going. That's exciting.
And I suppose the advantage of that kind of, for the journalist's point of view, is by, on their Twitter list, it's selective who, you can kind of, with email, you can't ban people, can you? Whereas your Twitter list, you're only going to get DMs from people that you follow. So there's a kind of yeah, you remove that barrier of spam there that I suppose you get in email.
For a journalist, if I was a journalist now, I'd love it. It's fantastically democratic. You earn reputation in a journalist network through your creating goodwill and the quality of the stories that you pitch to that journalist. Yes, if a journalist gets pissed off with you, they just blank you. And you know, use the tools within Twitter to block people. Therefore, it's actually driving up standards in the industry. The other thing is, it's very quickly to out bad practice as a journalist, and you see examples every day of journalists doing that, where they receive full pitches, and they it's fairly brutal, but you know, they share those with their network. So it's great. It's Twitter's absolutely driving up standards in the traditional PR industry.
And you talked a little bit before about measurements. So what's your top tips and some of the, you know, metrics that you use to measure the success of online PR campaigns? Do some of the offline metrics that you would use transpond quite well, or do you need a completely different set of tools to measure?
No, you need another set of tools. And let's be frank about this. The PR industry has been grappling with measurement for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
And it hasn't solved it. Now, if you move, we move, this is the beauty, and this is what I get very excited about. We're moving from a time where PR has traditionally seek to influence editorial within the print world. It's now moving online.
Yeah.
Within the online publishing world and networks. Now, you can absolutely, to a very, very granular level, measure that. Very simply, using tools that you know Google provides freely. We now could go and look at Google Analytics and work out how many people had searched for B2B marketing podcasts yesterday.
Yeah.
And very quickly create a program to try and direct some of that traffic to your own website.
Yeah.
You know, and that's incredibly exciting. Then we can measure that. At the end of the day, once we've set our campaign, we can look at how much of that traffic we managed to capture. The beauty about search is when people are looking for a service or a product for a search engine, they're motivated by it. So, you know that they want to buy. So it gives you very, very, very good level of measurement criteria. The PR industry, and that, you know, this is what we've done with our business. The PR industry historically has always had issues in engaging with the marketing community, because the marketing director within a business wants to know what return they're going to get for a given level of investment. You spend so many pounds of input, how much am I going to get in sales?
Yeah.
Now, PR has always talked about influence and creating reputation around brand, and has always been very, very nervous about sales. Now, actually, using even very simple tools that Google provides, you can very quickly show the impact of a campaign on absolute sales. So at its crudest level, we're doing that. And you move beyond that, then you're getting into a whole level of the whole debate around social analytics and the measurement tools around that.
Yeah.
And again, you know, we're just beginning to break new ground in this area.
Yeah, and for anyone on the podcast listening who's interested in those kind of, you know, how to measure social media, there's Measurement Camp, which is kind of a collaborative effort that's going on in the UK to kind of come up with some standards, which is really worth, you know, either going along to their meetings or at least tracking what they're up to on their website. So I definitely recommend having a look at that. So onto a bit of a, you know, bit more serious note here, Stephen. I know you're a big fan of The Apprentice in the UK. Do you think that's, as you know, as business people, as digital marketers, as PR people, there's much that we can learn from that, or is it just kind of a bit of lighthearted entertainment?
The Apprentice is good. The reason I like The Apprentice is because it's one of the very few programs on mainstream TV in the UK that shines a window on business and entrepreneurship. And brings that to a mainstream audience. And for that reason alone, it's incredibly powerful. We'd love to see more of it. And, you know, programming on business programming in the UK is generally fairly poor. And, you know, the reason I'm a big fan is for that reason. You look at the Dragon's Den genre. Dragon's Den, again, is incredibly popular. You don't actually learn a great deal from that format because it's fairly brutal, whereas in The Apprentice, every week there's a specific task, there's a absolutely specific set of learnings from that task, and it's almost as if an MBA is being played out in real time on telly. And frankly, I'd recommend that anyone considering just doing an MBA has a look at The Apprentice, because the amount you learn is incredible. You've got to look quite hard, analyze, but it's there.
Brilliant. Okay, and just a final question now then, Stephen. Is there kind of one sort of, not instant, but quite actionable, quick thing, online PR tip that you'd recommend listeners to go out and do, and a step to take, really, that, it might not be that difficult, but, it's something you can go out, do straight after listening, and that's going to have, great influence on their online PR efforts?
Three very, very, very simple things.
Yep.
The first is look at Google Analytics and Google Trends. Motivated buyers are using Google to search every single day for the products and services that you are selling. It's very, very straightforward to build a program to direct some of that traffic to your site.
Yeah.
Second thing, blogging. We talked a little bit about blogging. Blogging is a medium that you can absolutely control. If you create a blog off your own domain, your own URL, and post to it regularly with topical content around keywords that are going to drive traffic, it will have an incredible influence on the amount of traffic you generate. You then use that to build up a network of inbound links, and your search rankings will rise. Thirdly, and this is the whole area that really excites me, we've seen a lot of talk about social networking. Social networking is a business-to-consumer channel. Actually, the potential, I believe, is huge potential exists for business to business. And the brands, look at the brands that are creating communities around themselves, and they're the brands in the future that are absolutely going to win.
Cheers to that, Stephen. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks so much for the opportunity. Really appreciate
Cheers.
It.
Cheers. Thank you. All nice right. one. Thanks, mate. Bye.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Now, we would really like to hear from you. So if you have any questions or comments, send them to info@ai-digital.com, and feel free to send in MP3 files as well, and we'll play them. If you're a subscriber, we'd like to thank you for your valuable time. If you haven't subscribed yet and you'd like this show delivered to your earbuds automatically, you can find Internet Marketing on iTunes. Just search under the business and marketing and management categories. Or you can find us at Feedburner at feeds.feedburner.com/academyim. We'd also encourage you to leave comments on iTunes. Well, this is Andy White signing off, wishing you the best until we see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.